This is the Beat Your Genes podcast, and my name is Nate G. I've created this podcast to bridge together the science of evolutionary psychology and the clinical experience of Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk, all so that we can discover what life is all about. In each episode, Dr. Lyle and Dr. Hawk analyze and explain the psychology behind real-life situations from our listeners on topics like romance, friendship, work, family, health, and many, many more. A new episode comes out every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you'd like to call in and leave a voicemail question or comment to be read on the show, the U.S. number is 714-900-2601. Or send it in through the website, www.beatyourgenes.org. All right. Good evening, everybody. It's Nate G here, along with Dr. Doug Lyle and Dr. Jen Hawk with the Beat Your Genes podcast. Dr. Lyle, how are you doing this evening?
Good. All is well. We're without Jen tonight, but what the heck?
All right. Well, yeah. Apologies to the audience. I lost my audio from the actual original recording of this show. So we're flying solo again with Jen, without Jen. And notice how in the introduction I said Dr. Lyle's name first. Just a bit of muscle memory, so I'm sure Jen will love that when she hears it.
Sure. Yep. All good, Nathan. All is going well.
Yeah. And I was going to say, Jen's not here, so we can just skip all the small talk and just go straight to
the
questions.
Yeah. God, who needs that chick stuff? We don't need that. Well, I do. I hear that both you and Jen did a splendid job at the National Health Association presentations. I heard that from numerous clients. So well done, Nathan. I'll look forward to seeing it whenever there's a process for me to be able to watch.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Lyle. Dr. Hawk did fantastic. I was looking forward to seeing her talk, which was called "It's Not the Pleasure Trap, Not Your Fault, But It Is Your Responsibility: Reimagining the Pleasure Trap." So I really had a good time. She had some funny videos in her slides and some really good stuff to say. I really enjoyed it. Listening
Fabulous.
To Dr. Hawk live.
You bet. All right. Well, what else is happening? What else are we looking at?
Well, we've got some questions from listeners, and so we'll just get straight to the meat of it, or maybe meat's not the right word, but it's okay. Yeah. All right. Dear doctors, our adult son, who's 23, is still living at home to save money to buy his own place. We charge him $300 a month, and he buys some of his own food as he prefers hot dogs and pizza over the healthy vegan food that I cook. This year, he was riding his very fast motorcycle without insurance for short rides. But since the consequences of his getting in an accident without having insurance and having no medical coverage could be extremely steep, we chose to put a wheel lock on his bike until he gets insurance. Since then, he basically ignores us more than usual and barely responds to us when we speak to him. How can we get through to him and put an end to this standoff? This is a non-negotiable matter and easily solved if he gets insurance. We give him the key to the lock, but he just won't get insurance. I'm not sure what point he is making other than being stubborn. Could you please offer some insight?
I have a couple of thoughts about this. I want you to, please, Nathan, read to me the first part of this again. Just read me the first, couple, three sentences.
Okay. Dear doctors, our adult son, who's 23, is still living at home to save money to buy his own place. We charge him $300 a month, and he buys some of his own food as he prefers hot dogs and pizza over the healthy vegan food that I cook. This year, he was riding his very fast motorcycle without insurance for short rides. Since the consequences...
Okay. Mm-hmm. I got it. Okay. Yeah. I guess obviously there's follow-up questions that I would have for, sounds like this is the mother writing. And it doesn't sound like otherwise necessarily the rapport has been particularly strained. It is now as the son is pulling a ridiculous sophomore stunt. And he's getting away with it, and he's basically acting like he's the queen of the genetic chessboard, and he's pushing his parents all around the board you know, basically, i.e. bad attitude, not talking to him, giving him the cold shoulder, all about this, essentially a completely reasonable response to their actions about him being just flagrantly irresponsible. So but I'm not hearing other things about the, you know, how bad the rapport has been generally over the last couple, 3 years, et cetera. The, in terms of getting through to him, this is what I would do. So I would call a family meeting with him, between the two parents and your son. And I would begin the family meeting by saying the following type of thing. And that is to say, you know, we've in this family, we've always been there, have each other's backs. That this is a family that has worked hard together and supported each other. And there's families that don't do that, but this is a family that does. And so there are families that, you know, in the old days, when a young person would turn 16 or 18, whatever the time was, a father would walk out in the front of the yard and drop a plate on a rock and tell them that their son no longer had a plate at the house. That was, you know, not an uncommon type tradition. And we don't do that. You're 23 years old. Okay, you still live here with us. You pay us a minimal rent. We do that because it's a family that supports each other, and we have a lot of confidence and respect for you. And we expect that if you feel the same way, that you need to act that way. So we know that you're not happy about having your motorcycle locked up. But on the other hand, it's a reasonable response to what it is that you chose to do. Now, we need to see an awful lot better action around here in terms of your relationship to us. And we need to see you get these chores done, and we need to see you hustling and being a part of this group, or you're not. Okay. And so, you know, we will be talking behind your back about what we think we see. And we're going to be monitoring whether or not you're able to snap out of this. But what you need to know is that effectively you are either on your own team by yourself, and which is fine. If that needs to be the way it is, we completely respect that. Or you're still in this team right now and inside this household. So it's up to you. And quite frankly, you know, 23 is a pretty old man to be living in their parents' house. And it can't work for everybody. And you may be a little too headstrong and a little too much of thinking that you're grown up, which maybe you are, for you to actually be here. And if that's the way it is, no hard feelings. It's just time for you to go. Okay, so either way, whatever works for you is going to be how this works. Because if this doesn't work for you, if you have to maintain this sort of stony silence in order to try to punish us for actually doing a perfectly appropriate thing to answer your irresponsibility, then that's fine. That's no problem. That just means that it's time for you to go. Okay? I.e., we are friendly but firm, and we don't pull any punches, and we hit them straight between the eyes. Okay? And they, in other words, this is sharp angle. Okay, this is absolutely not buying into any silent manipulation. We give voice to it, we give words to it, and we hit people right in the face, unapologetically. Okay, and now that young man has to look and blink at those two parents, and he is realizing it's showdown time. It's like, well, if he maintains this nonsense about his genetic queen of the chessboard and he can just push you around, if he wants to maintain that, then guess what? He gets his walking papers and he gets to go and discover what it is that he actually really needs, which is that he needs to be calibrated. So when you break down behavior, all you're ever watching, folks, is you're watching a cost-benefit analysis. The behavior is nothing other than the muscles and the tendons as they move the body around, move the mouth in response to the cost-benefit analytics that are taking place inside the brain. So that individual is looking at a situation, and he's got all kinds of evidence that he's got his parents by the genetic short hairs. And that's exactly how he's behaving. Okay? And so I am no fan of any of that. Any kid, any person, anybody starts to try to push me around with any kind of manipulation like that, they're going to get it right in the face. Okay? I'm going to call them out on exactly what it is that I see that they're doing, what it is that I think that they're up to. I'm going to give them credit where credit is due about who they are as an individual and what they can contribute. And I'm going to let them know what's expected. And I'm going to tell them it's not a problem if they don't want to answer the call. It's no problem at all. And what this is it's actually negotiating from a position of power. Okay? So whoever wrote this, if it's the mom and you're like, oh my God, but it's my son. Yeah, it's your son what? Has to move three streets away into the back of his friend's garage and pay his friend $450 a month, you know, to live there. It's like, let him do it. Oh my God, but he's so young. He's not so young. 21-year-old men were jumping in the air in the middle of German fire over Normandy, for God's sakes. Okay? That 23-year-old can just learn to be a hell of a lot more respectful about what it is that he's got. And if he can't, he's going to have to learn the hard way. Okay? Now, it is no terrible thing for parents to wind up with a showdown like this where you show a young person the door. It's fine. Okay? So I've done it twice with kids that weren't even mine. And the rapport today is great. I mean, it's really good. But did it go through an uncomfortable period? Yeah, it went through an uncomfortable period where they found out that they don't just get to essentially exploit older people just because older people are kind and generous and emotionally stable. Okay? They get to find out that there's the line, and if you go over it, guess what? You just turned into more cost and benefit, and see you later. Bye. Okay, they'll come home. They'll come back with their tail halfway between their... First of all, they may come back very quickly, manipulatively as hell, giving you a bunch of tears. Don't buy it. Okay, no, that's okay. We'll repair all this and everything will be fine by Christmas time. You just go out there and face reality. Okay, the reason why they behave this way, the great mystery here, is simply cost-benefit analysis. It is essentially he's leveling anger at you, signaling to you that you have been unfair, and he's penalizing you. Okay, and he's saying, "Well, I'll just take me and my genes and my friendship and my life and my interesting life as in its development as I go towards reproduction and social success. I'll just take that away from you. I'll just abandon you as parents. Fine, go ahead, try it. Make my day." Okay. Everybody needs to watch Dirty Harry. Go ahead. Make my day. These are the rules. These are the expectations. We've both thought it through. It's completely reasonable. And if you don't like the constraints here, that's not a problem. It just means that at this time of life, we aren't all meant to be living under the same roof. And that's fine. We're still friends. It just, we've got an alteration in the landscape. Ridiculous. Saving for his own place means he makes plenty of money. $300 a month, way too cheap. Okay? This kid needs to be gone. That's the truth. But you give him the opportunity in case that what he needs is a cold slap on the face, you give it to him. Okay? You say, "I'm about to slap you on the face. You know, this is what it is. You got it coming to you. But if you shape up, everything's going to be okay for a while." Okay? And so we give him one shot at it. And if we don't see him immediately, you know, within hours, come back apologizing and saying he's going to get his act together and et cetera. If we don't get that, then you know, no problem. And mothers that cower behind this kind of behavior are, you know, usually the wrong people to try to be making these decisions. Dads are better at this. OK. Okay. So, you know, not always. I'm just telling you, it's 8.5 out of 10 times the dad is going to be a lot better at this. Yeah, it's not your baby anymore. It's a 23-year-old man. So that young man can face some reality, because the reason you're getting the behavior you're getting is that he's miscalibrated. All right. That's good,
wonderful,
Nathan.
Doctor. Thank you. That's amazing. So I think as a young man, I probably needed to hear some of the things that you just said.
All right. What else do we have?
All right. Dear doctors, my partner is 44 and has never had a serious job for more than a couple of months. Companies have either let him go or he quit of his own accord. He hates authority, always complains about having superiors or work being dull. He once started a private business, but it didn't pan out. I feel like he didn't give it his best shot. He's an intelligent, well-read guy, but there's something about him that seems to make him unemployable. Aversion to authority, disagreeableness, and a fair share of introversion. He mostly just wants to be left alone to read books and scroll through Twitter. I've been the main breadwinner for many years, and I am fed up. People tell me that I'm an enabler, but the truth is, he won't actually move out of my own home, even though I've asked him many times. The threat of losing the relationship has not pushed him to make amends, like getting a real job, spending less time online, or trying to entice me with some vision of a better future together. Is he a freeloader? He claims to love me, but I honestly don't see how. He never takes me out, never buys me gifts. We've been living like roommates for years, basically just co-parenting with no romance. The thing stopping me from throwing out his stuff and changing the locks is the fact that we have a 10-year-old child. That and the fact that my partner has a bad temper when pushed. Am I being too soft on this guy, or is he ego or enlightenment trapped, or both? And also, how do I get out safely?
Interesting. Enabler simply equals highly agreeable. That's what that is. Codependent, that just means highly agreeable. So the abuse literature, substance abuse, as well as, you know, domestic violence, etc., will make the case that somehow that there's this enabling, quote unquote, process. No, these are just agreeable people operating under various cost-benefit analysis, often secondary to physical intimidation or intimidation of various kinds. And intimidation is motivation through fear. So the and often that fear has a latent, violent threat that sits underneath it. So we hear that that's here. So in this case, so i.e., how do I get out safely? Well, what on earth does that mean? That means that the person actually is in fear of physical violence. That's what I'm hearing. They're not saying, how do I get out safely financially with respect to some legal proceedings that I might be responsible for this guy because we have a common law marriage and he might get a check from me for the next 30 years. No, that's not what I heard. My guy has a temper and he's gets angry, and how do I get out safely? I.e., I'm intimidated by the threat of violence. That's the bottom line here. So that does not make you an enabler. It makes you a highly agreeable person with a lot of patience, with a lot of conflict in the game here. You've got a 10-year-old son. This is his father. He's not all bad. He's got some theoretical assets. But when it all shakes down, the brains didn't turn into any money, and it doesn't turn into any sense of responsibility for actually pulling his share of the load, etc. And when you've asked him to leave, he won't leave, etc. So, and you're, quote, fed up. So I think it is certainly time for a change. And it's probably long past time for a change, but it is certainly time now for a change. So there would be processes that we would want to go through to these come to be. Every situation is a little bit different. Every state is a little bit different. Everybody's finances are a little bit different. Everybody's soon to be shithead X is a little bit different. And so all these little pieces have variables to them. Now, one of the things that I would say is that when we start heading toward a potentially highly contentious situation, we want to go at it in degrees. So that way we can tell how dangerous it gets. Almost nobody goes from zero, you know, to 100 in one process. So people that are potentially violent, they make a lot of noises and they give a lot of signals before they ever do anything. And that's good. That is almost always the case. The reason for that isn't mysterious. It's because it's easier to get what you want by threatening than actually doing anything dangerous and legally problematic. So that's why we can count on him to actually make threatening noises before he would ever do anything. So we're going to take little actions for him. We're going to take little actions for him to respond to, for us to then to respond to those responses. So the way I would do things, I don't want to put too many channel factors or conditions up in front of you before you could start taking action. So you would not have to do this first, but it might be a good idea to do this first. So it might be a good idea to get yourself a legal consult with a family law attorney and say, okay, here's my situation and what are my legal rights? What are the rules of the game? Because I would like to request this man, my common law husband, but we're not married, and father of my kid, and that we've been together all these years. I would like, you know, this is my home. Apparently she's the owner. And I would like him to leave. So what are my rights and what are his rights and how should this transpire? Or if it had to get legal, what is the process by which this would happen? So find out the rules of the game. This is one of the most important things that people need to do when they're in high conflict situations with an individual like this. You actually need to know the rules, so that you follow the rules to the letter of the law, which puts you, as they won't do that, it puts you in increasing position of power with respect to court, okay? So I don't know what the rules are, but in the family law attorney may say, well, who knows what the judge is going to say, you know? It's like, okay, maybe there aren't any perfect rules in this particular situation. So let's suppose that there are not. So what I would do is I would then probably do the following. I would probably imagine that I would tell this individual that I would give him like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in advance notice, and I would tell him I'm going to be gone over a 3-day weekend here in about 2 weeks. And I'm going to take our son on that 3-day weekend. And when I come back, so I'm going to leave on, we're going to leave on Friday afternoon, and I'm going to be back on Monday evening. So when I come back on Monday evening, you need to be gone. So that gives you 3 days to, you know, make sure you hide your jewelry and your spare cash and get the money out of the mattress or whatever. Whatever, anything that's super important to you, make sure that you quietly store those things away before you do this, okay? Your secret diary, whatever. Let's make sure that you've got this stored away at your mother's or in a storage locker or something. And so once you do that, then, and you take pictures of everything so that if he goes on a rampage and destroys everything in your house, you can essentially, you know, show the judge if you need to. But we're going to do it just firmly. And we're also going to do it. Not only are we going to do it verbally, or you don't actually have to do it verbally if you don't want to face this, you can do it by email. Don't do it by text. Texts aren't necessarily saved and it's problematic in court, but you could send him an email or you can do it verbally and you say, listen, and then you could follow it up by email that I'm going to be gone, and in an email you could reiterate, as I said earlier tonight, or as I said last night, I'm going to be gone on Friday through that Monday, and this is the time when I need you to leave my home or need to leave the house and find your own place to live for the time being. I need my own space, and I don't know what the future holds, but I do need you to find your own space. I need you to leave. Okay? So that's what we do. Now you say, oh my God, I'm going to, you know, basically uncage the lion, and here he comes, and he's going to be angry and yelling and screaming. Great. It's not a problem. So if he yells and screams and threatens and how dare you, and you feel intimidated, you go get a restraining order. Okay? And so no problem. And you just tell the judge, this is what I asked him to do. And when I asked him to do that, this is the response that I got. If you want, have your cell phone ready. A cell phone can be, you know, you can have it just sitting there with the recording on, and or you can record the phone conversation, or I don't know how that's done. But the point is that if he's yelling and screaming, that's great. If you can get a recording, great. If you don't have to get a recording, that's okay. You can go in court and fill out the little affidavit and say exactly what the situation is. And you got your family law attorney, and there you go. Okay. So now we just, there's a thing in the world that's a really good thing if you don't live in communist China. In the United States, it's called civilization. Okay. So civilization is all about how we have a rule of law where we don't have to be intimidated and beat up and stolen by our fellow citizens. We don't have to do that because we have a government that hopefully they haven't defunded our local police department. Okay, so that's what that is. And so we basically step down through that process, having planned it in advance. And again, it's actually, it's basically a very safe process because they find out that they're being checkmated by the law. And a lot of disagreeable people have to find out the hard way that they don't get to intimidate their spouses. They don't, you know, if they break a bunch of stuff, gets reported, you just call the police. So you come home and you say, well, this is what happened. And it's very clear that you've got photos time stamped of your nice, beautiful home. And then you sent this email and then you went away for the weekend and then you came back. And then this is what it is that took place. Okay. So if you want to get really crafty, I've had people set up hidden cameras and to actually monitor that situation and record it. So that's probably going more than you need to go, but depends. Depends on what your situation is. This sounds like this guy is lazy, disagreeable, probably not particularly violent, so we don't have to worry about much of these things. She's just worried because she's a very nice person. She's worried that about his anger. His anger is intimidating. Let's hope that she doesn't have any particular worries about her 10-year-old son and whether or not, you know, a breakup is bad for the son's development. It is not. Okay. So no sweat there. And, yeah, it's time. And we don't have to tell this person that we're breaking up. It's time for us to, we need a break. You need some time to yourself. You need to simplify your life and to just, you know, get a feel for whether or not this is how you want to continue or not. And so you need him to go get his own place, and it's going to be, you know, you need a couple, 3 months off, and then you'll reevaluate. You don't know where you're going to be in a month or two. You don't know now that you want at least 2 months off, and three feels more right. And then you'll see where it is that you're at. Oh, well then forget it. Once I leave here, I'm never coming back, i.e. death penalty. And you say, well, that's the way it works out. That's the way it works out. Okay. Again, just as in the first answer that we had, we negotiate from a position of power, people. This is a very important position to be in. We have figured out how the game works, what the rules are, and what the worst case scenario is. In the first case, it's like, oh my God, my son won't talk to me, and I don't know, I just couldn't kick him out, and what a horrible thing. No, he'll survive just fine. And he'll go out in the world and he'll get recalibrated and he'll find out that his parents are giving him a 5 times better deal than anybody else would give him. So he will eventually get his head on straight, and then we'll have a perfectly fine, warm relationship. And 10 years from now, we'll laugh about it. That's fine. Okay, that's not a problem. You just have to be in a psychological position of power where you are prepared for what looks like a terrible thing but isn't. The same thing is true here. Okay, we have to be prepared for every nasty wrinkle. We have to know exactly where we stand legally, and we've got it all mapped out. Okay, and so he is not going to go from 0 to 100. He's going to do little threatening things, and we'll see how bad they are. If they're bad enough, restraining order, court, etc. That's how we do it. God forbid, if you got a bunch of money in a mutual bank account, make sure that you get it all on your side. Okay, you can leave him a couple of $100. Just get control of the situation in every way that you can. And then this is what Alan always said. He goes, I would be a benevolent dictator. And he probably would, okay? So reasonably benevolent. So you get as much control of the situation as you can, and then you can get benevolent at that point. Once they have behaved appropriately, if they earn their way back to a good situation, precisely as we had in question number one. You are in control of the situation. You are a benevolent dictator. If they don't behave properly, they have consequences, no problem. Okay, eventually they will calibrate around the new realities, and then we'll have whatever relationship we have at the end of it that makes sense. So that's how we deal with it.
Wonderful, Dr. Lau. Thank you so much. Yeah.
And all right.
Best of luck to this particular listener.
You bet. Absolutely. All right. What else
next
do we
question.
Have?
Dear doctors, I'm writing about how to handle my relationship with my son. My son is 14 years old. His personality is not very charming. He says very mean things to me. He's violent towards me and things, and he has a hard time making and keeping friends. He's selfish in a way that is ruthless. Our dog is terrified of him. He seldom listens to me or his teachers. He doesn't make an effort in school. He's actually very smart, but he only does the minimal amount of work just to pass his classes. I have never pushed him to do more either. I blame myself for that. His personality turned out this way. His dad is also not a very nice man, and when my son was little, I lived with his dad, and it was not a harmonic household. But I can't turn back time, and now here we are. I live alone with my son and my dog, and it's not a good life. I don't know how to deal with him anymore. He does not respect me or other people. He doesn't respect animals and not nature. I've tried so many things. I'm so embarrassed to have these feelings towards my child, and when other people see the way he treats me, I'm also embarrassed. I'm responsible to give my son a good life at least 4 more years before he's an adult and is responsible for his own life. But I worry about his future. I can't see him creating a happy life with this personality. Please give me some advice on how to be a better mother and how to cope.
All right. Being a better mother and how to cope are two very, very different ideas. This is obviously, we could call this disagreeable night. This is the disagreeable genes as we watch how problematic disagreeable genes are as they push around agreeable people and try to secure resources and basically are very costly emotionally. So, you know, our first kid isn't necessarily that disagreeable. It sounds like it was fairly decent relationship between mom and dad and child. The second one, this guy is quite disagreeable again, probably not as bad as this one. So our little 14-year-old here is winning the prize of the night so far. And so I think that what we have to understand, first of all, that you don't owe this kid anything other than a roof over his head and, you know, 2,000 calories a day. So the talking to an individual with one child, I mean, it's heartbreaking to look at this situation and realize if you wanted to have children and this child was a wanted child, this was something that you wanted to do as an important part of your life experience, that unfortunately you went 0 for 1. This is just how it goes in the genes. So the genes are a crapshoot, and you never know what you're going to get. which is my friend from 20 years ago, Ana Real, had a saying that said, "Don't breed with freaks." So this is what happened. She had a child with a very disagreeable man, apparently, and these genes came to dominate that section of the gene pool in her. In other words, they dominated her, the genes that she has sitting on those gene sites. So the child wound up with an awful lot of it, his father's genes in terms of personality. So that's what we've got. And you've gone 0 for 1. And you've already given it a tremendous amount of energy and given it your very best shot. You've tried to accommodate and hope that this was that there would be some way to bend the twig so that the tree would grow a little bit differently. But that's just not how it works. Personality is, for all intents and purposes, 100% genetic. It isn't 100% genetic because you can change somebody's personality by putting an ice pick into their head and having them survive, and then it turns out that disturbs all kinds of things and they manage to change their personality probably for the worse. Somebody could have a stroke. Sometimes that changes it for the better. But the truth of the matter is that the essence of who the person would be, barring a traumatic brain injury or injurious processes secondary to drugs of some kind, this is not going to change. And so your son is going to go through this life being a disagreeable, difficult personality. Sounds like he's if he's very smart and very disagreeable, he's doomed to success in high tech. So anyway, so the next 4 years before this child, walks out the door and we shuffle him off to some situation with his, FAFSA package from the government to get him off to some school that he doesn't have to live under your roof. Before that happens, we've got 4 years to go. And my best advice to you is to essentially, as much as possible, extricate yourself from his orbit and don't try to get him to really do anything. So there's no reason. It sounds like he will go to school and he'll pass, which is all it is that we want him to do, which is great. If he doesn't pass, that's fine. But he probably will. If he's very smart, he'll do the minimum. I would see to it that, or I would certainly make sure that we don't push him to learn anything difficult. God forbid he takes a chemistry class or a math class he doesn't need. His entire curriculum should be the absolute minimum. If he wants to play video games all day long and all night long, that's fine. If he wants to eat Twinkies and M&Ms and drink Coca Cola, that's fine. Just let him do whatever the hell he wants, so long as, you're able to keep your distance. I wouldn't put any parental controls on this kid. This is not a nervous system that's going to do well. If he's sufficiently threatening and potentially violent and the dog's afraid of him, obviously if he ever gets violent with you and grabs you and shakes you to intimidate you in some way or does something actually physically possibly dangerous to you, that's an entirely different story. Okay. At that point, you have to, you have to basically face the possibility of having legal action involved and having him shipped off, and he can just spend a few, a couple of months in juvenile hall and get, basically, you have to understand he won't be damaged at juvenile hall. Okay. There isn't any damage done. He just gets wide eyed just how bad it is there, and he'll never want to go back. Okay. So, I don't know what they have these days in terms of this sort of thing. I know I've been involved in the criminal justice system and have had worked with a lot of youngsters 18 years and under that were locked up for periods of time because they were violent to their parents. So no problem. If he needs to go to a little state mental hospital because he got violent with you, if we have a little sequence where that happens, fair enough. Let him go get shipped off and let him deal with all the losers that are there. But he probably won't, particularly if he gets his candy and gets his computer games, etc. The conflicts of interest could be maybe want to play his music loud in case we're going to get him a nice set of headphones so he can put it on the headphones. Basically, what you want to do is you want to get as much disagreeable distance in your own house that you can. And you've got only so many days to go. Okay, so there may be places that you can ship him off to during the summers. I don't know what you can afford and what's reasonable, but there may be some place where he can, I don't know, go count turtles in the Galapagos Islands somewhere. I don't know what might be possible, but if I was a parent of that individual, I would look at my resources carefully and I would see whether or not I any avenues at all where I could get myself a break. If he was also, again, resources, you know, this lady probably doesn't have the resources to do this, but you never know. You never know who might, what relative, what grandfather might have some resources. This kid is a prime candidate to get shipped off to a boarding school. That would be the best thing for you as his mother. It would be perfectly fine for him. No worries at all. He'd probably get kicked out of there, so it might not work. But then you send him to the next one. So there's always some greedy school somewhere that could use money. So that's probably not, you know, that would be my ideal situation, to literally get you away from him and have this kid be a kid that you see on the, you know, holiday weekends and 2 weeks in the summer or whatever. But that's probably not practical, and that's probably not going to happen in these circumstances. So we are down to 48 months or 46 months or 44 months or, you know, whatever it is that we're down to. We're down to a couple of hundred weeks. And then it's over, okay? And we'll never have to redo those 200 weeks again. And so we make them as peaceful as we can. We set up the minimal of rules, and we basically take our life as much as we can away from this young man and go play co-ed volleyball and, you know, go to movies with friends and go to, you know, go on some dates and basically separate yourself as much as you can. That is actually the best advice that I've got for a situation like this.
Wow. Thank you, Dr. Lau.
All right.
You have a way of putting tough situations into, you know, reasonable solutions, and I really appreciate that. That is, sounds like this is a tough situation for this lady.
Yeah, it's a tough situation. So we make the very best of it, and then it's over. So it's not going to be the rest of her life. It only, you know, this is mathematizing the misery. So we sometimes it, you know, you might even get a, you know, a calendar, you know, on the computer or something, and you get to mark off the weeks, give yourself a little check mark. Got 200 weeks to go. Sometimes that's a useful thing to do, something like that. So, but one way or the other, we're not trying to somehow rescue this relationship or rescue this individual from their future. It just is what it is, and we make the best of what we've got.
Oh, amazing. Wow.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, up for one more, Dr. Lyle?
One more juicy one? Sure.
All right. Dear Dr. Lyle, dear doctors, I am perhaps unsurprisingly having a major personality clash with my mother-in-law. She's extremely religious and insists on praying for me and my husband, regardless of what we are up to or going through. Every success we have is owing to her prayers, and every failure she claims is in spite of her prayers. When my husband recovered from cancer, she told us it was because she prayed for him. But when I started a million-dollar company, she says this is because she prayed for me. Now, with lockdowns ending and families being brought back together, I'll be facing her soon, and I will no doubt hear myself that I am only successful because of her instrumental God communing. She has been a major point of stress for me since getting married 3 years ago. Her brand of undermining theological interference really bugs me. Do you prescribe some disagreeable distance or perhaps something else? I want to be a pleasant daughter-in-law, but I find myself feeling nothing short of hateful for her godly gaslighting.
Yeah. Well,
just ungodly
this gaslighting. Is a listener who's, yeah, ungodly gaslighting. Yeah, well, this is a listener that knows our lingo, and this is disagreeable distance all the way. So it's important, though, to actually identify the core conflict that's involved. So the core conflict is actually not between you and your mother-in-law. It's between your husband and you and your mother-in-law. So there are three individuals in this equation, and so there's dynamics all around the chessboard. So so we need to, in order for us to understand how to best play this thing, we have to have a pretty good open discussion with your husband about how he feels about the whole scope of all of these elements. So. And as I said before with a previous question, every single situation here has the nuances of personality and many other factors in the situation that are pieces of this. So all I can do is I can take this as a scaled down sketch of a situation and then say how it is that I would proceed. I can't tell you definitively through the answer because I don't know what the questions would be, what the answers to my questions would be if I started asking. So I would need to ask the husband, does he see this conflict? What does he think about it? What does he feel about it? Where is he conflicted about it? And I need to understand why. So to my way of thinking, that it would seem difficult for me to see what value the man's mother has to him. When there's a conflict between your mother and your wife, then there isn't any conflict. There shouldn't be a conflict. In other words, it's pretty well, mom can just go to the guillotine and needs to know that that's true. The wife overwhelmingly comes first. So sometimes people need to get clear on that. Now, what does that mean? We don't give our mother the finger and tell her, don't bother sending me a Christmas card. No, we just disagreeable distance the lady. That's how we do it. So I also don't know about this particular family's set of circumstances, i.e. when COVID's now ending and now families are going to get back together. Well, I don't know about you, but my family never got together with anybody. So I don't know what this means. On the other hand, I have clients, you know, from all over the world that come from different cultures. And some of those cultures, I have a good friend named Rakesh and from India, and they have all kinds of family and extended family and incredible amounts of family action that takes place every weekend. There's a wedding or a funeral or a something, you know, is going on. So birthdays, anniversaries, there's just no end to it. In other words, they're just extraordinarily large, interconnected social group. So everybody's circumstances are quite different. I would assume most people are not getting together with their mother-in-law very often. So therefore, if you're getting together with your mother-in-law, you know, if you're bumping into her, you know, every 2 weeks, that can be every 2 months instead. And not only that, if the husband feels like he can't move it down to every 2 months, then he can just go once a month and you can go every other month. Okay, so that would be, we try that out for a while. Whatever the poison is, the first thing we do is we dilute it, for goodness sakes. And then if that doesn't work, then we dilute it some more. And what we want to do at the end of the day is basically have the following attitude that, like I said, there's three people in this drama and there are many relationships. I haven't really thought through how many there are, but there's quite a few. Some mathematician would tell me there's a mathematical formula for this, but there's the relationship of husband to wife. That's one. There's a relationship from husband to his mother. That's the second. There's a relationship with mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. That's three. Then there's the husband and wife versus the mother-in-law. That's four. Then there's the husband and the mother versus the wife. That's five. Then there's the two women vis-a-vis, you know, potentially, which they are not an alliance. That's six. Okay, so I think that's what it is. So we want to know, we want to actually look at this thing Harry Brown style, which is this, that the relationship between the husband and wife should, we should be thinking as golden as we can. And that is that my job is to figure out in a relationship how it is, you know, I'm going to be happy if you're happy. And so I'm going to be wanting to figure out how I can make you happy. So, because by seeing your happiness, I'm happier. That's the core of a great relationship. So two people, both with this perspective, this thing plays out like this, that if the husband loves his mother, despite the fact that she's a, you know, worthless bitch. But the point of the matter is, if he loves his mother and he wants to spend some time with her and to signal to her her importance and enjoys the interaction, then fine, for God's sakes, have a relationship with your mother. You don't have to have a relationship with your daughter-in-law. That is not necessary. It's not written anywhere. Okay? Well, what if the mother-in-law wants to have a relationship, basically a dominance hierarchical relationship with her daughter-in-law? Well, she doesn't get to have one. Okay, so you don't get to have relationships with people that don't want to have relationships with you. It's real simple. Happened to me my whole life. All these, you know, beautiful, intelligent, interesting women, they didn't want to have relationships with me, and I wanted to have relationships with them. Shit out of luck. There's just no way it's going to work. Too bad. Okay? So we all learn that you don't just get to have relationships that you might want to have. And so the husband needs to get this clear in his head, that he might like his wife to have a relationship with his mother, but that's absurd. He needs to be looking inside of his wife's head and say, what would make you happy? Okay? Does it make you happy to see my mother? The answer is no. Actually, the truth is I don't. Okay? Well, it would make me really happy if you would just, you know, okay, well, what? In other words, we want to, I will choke down a little bit of that behavior on the part of a valued coalition member. Gee, I'd really like you to come to this thing. Okay. But we just have an agreement in this discussion that you're calling in a chip. Okay? Just to let you know. Okay? So I remember I did this with Rep. Esselstyn a couple, 3 years ago, that they were going back and forth on their plant stock thing, and they normally would have me speak twice, and they were going to have me speak once, and it was a long flight, and I wrote to them, and I said, listen, guys, I see you only have me speaking once, and I see you got a lot of people on the docket. You know, you don't have to have me. But if you want me there, I will come, but I'm just letting you know, it'll cost you a chip. And they cracked up. They were really, they were super cool about it. And they said, listen, you know, our docket has grown, and we know it's a long ways for you to come for one speech, and it's not the way you usually do things. So we're fine either way, but you know, whatever you want, Doug. And I'm like, you know what? No sweat at all. No harm done. I'm passing on it. And that's it. No problem. So in other words, I let them know with that language, and it was humorous and it was entertaining, but they knew exactly what that meant in Stone Age terms. And so the same thing would be true with this wife. In other words, the husband needs to be clear. You don't want to have anything to do with this lady. Now, the right way to disagreeable distance somebody is you just dilute them down to, you know, to the point where you can tolerate it, and you can realize, gee, if I only have to see her 3 times a year for, you know, if I'm only interacting with her for about 15 or 20 minutes at the party, so it's about 1 hour a year. So that means, you know, then we're, you know, there's a good chance somebody moves or dies or gets distracted in the next 5 years. So basically 5 hours for the next 5 years. Can I handle that? Yeah, I can find a way to do that. And so if we can essentially dilute this down and get a reasonable agreement with the husband may say, you know what, you don't need to do it at all. And quite frankly, I'm going to move the same direction. So I'm going to move this down to an every other week thing, to an every 6 weeks thing, and just fade to the background. And you don't need to come at all. Maybe you come a couple times a year, and that's that. And we just basically ghost her out of our existence. Fine. Let's talk it over. Let's reason through the parameters. Then let's run experiments on our estimated parameters about what we think. And realizing that we're not, quote, making agreements, we're making agreements to run an experiment. And that's an important consideration when people are contemplating negotiating changes and trying to think these things through. So we, you know, whether it's with your teenager and the noise and the drum playing or whatever it is, that the idea here is that we have agreements that we think that are going to work for us, but we also understand in principle that they might not, and that we have to renegotiate. And if we do, we do. That's fine. So that's how it is that I would do this. This is a disagreeable distance all the way. And the first thing you want to do is to understand that the relationship that counts, where the joy comes from, is your relationship with your husband. And he needs to understand that the same is true, and we have really no need for any third party like that in the mix. And if they're in the mix, we want to dilute them down to the lowest amount that continues to serve interests. And that's how we deal with it.
Amazing. I really like this dilute the poison. I chuckled when you first said it. So.
Yeah, that's what we want to do.
Yeah. It's amazing, Dr. Lau, because I really appreciate this this approach, because nowhere in your answer was, well, talk to her about the religion and see if you can get her head straight about how she's, you know, it's not really this or that. It's like, it's this direct alternative where it's irrelevant
right. What
she believes, and you're not trying to change anybody's mind. Just kind of accepting them for yes. Who they are and just recognizing that.
Yes, absolutely. Direct alternative, position of power. We don't want to have our outcome dependent on what somebody else does. Whatever it is that they do, we have an answer for what it is that they're going to do. So that's the theme of everything that went through all four of these questions tonight. It's the same. You're going to find the same principles at work no matter what the situation is.
Love it. It's excellent. Well, Dr. Lau, thank you so much for number one, for these answers, and number two, for doing them again.
So, absolutely. Yeah. You got it. I
appreciate that.
You got it. My pleasure. Yeah. Absolutely. And next week we'll have Jen Hawk back and we'll be rocking.
All right. Very good, Dr. Lau. Thank you so, so much. And we'll look forward to talking absolutely. With you and Dr. Hawk next week.
Fantastic. We'll see you soon, Nathan.
Right. Have a good night. Thanks for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe, write us a review, or share this podcast with a friend. To send in a question or read more about the show, you can visit our website at www.beatyourgenes.org. Until next time, this is Nate G., Dr. Lyle, and Dr. Hawk with Beat Your Genes, an evolutionary psychology podcast for finding happiness in the modern world.